Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Carol and Stephen's life together was perfect.
I've got to get going.
Right this second. Hey, baby.
Hey, sweetie.
I love you.
There's one small problem.
Hi. I'm Ralph. I'm his brother. We're twins.
Are your parents,
Yeah.
It can tear them apart.
I think you're going to let me know that everyone in your family's a midget.
A walk down the aisle.
Stephen's a very lucky guy. Just hope he's smart enough not to screw it up.
Is just a beginning.
There'll be rough patches, there's no doubt about it.
Canal Plus and Langley Productions proudly present command performances from Kate Beckinsale, Matthew McConaughey, Patricia Arquette, and in the role of a lifetime, Gary Oldman.
Well, you crazy assholes, you did it. You got us to watch the 2003 Matthew McConaughey-led, Gary Oldman shining, starring, Peter Dinklage co-starring, inextricable plot, Tiptoes.
You also left out the great Kate Beckinsale and Patricia Arquette. A truly cavalcade of stars for this one. And first things first, I guess McConaughey is the... In a sense, he's the traditional romantic lead, but I don't feel like he's doing the heft of the work in this film.
No, he is a lead of sorts. Guy, hi. How are you?
Yeah, good, man. Hey, Tim. I've just finished watching Tiptoes, a movie that I was first told about by a friend after we'd seen... What did we even go to? We went to Detective Pikachu together, and after we'd watched that, we got home and we were talking about the movie and smoking weed, which is not relevant, only this elevated how funny I found the premise of this movie in the first place. And he said, have you heard about the McConaughey dwarf movie? And I mean, I hadn't. And I guess, was this on your periphery?
Yeah, definitely. This is a movie that... Probably for me it was a couple of years ago, caught the attention of the corners of the internet that I hang out in, and people went fucking wild. It was one of those things where someone found out about it, and then suddenly there was a trailer, and everyone was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, for anyone who is listening along and hasn't seen the movie, or, I would recommend, watch the trailer alone. The trailer...
I mean, the trailer has just been hit. Guy, they have just been hit by the audio of the trailer. I know that you never listen to these episodes, but that's what happens in the Patreon palace.
Oh, wow. That's a nice touch. Now
we've done about 30 of these.
That's enough of experiencing it only with your ears. This is a movie that literally has to be seen to be believed. So I want you to pause the podcast and watch the goddamn thing. It does a thing... that so few trailers do, which is it accurately represents both in tone, quality, and story, the movie that you are deciding whether or not to watch. And when I say it must be seen to be believed, I can't make it clear enough. Gary Oldman portrays a little person in this movie. And I don't want to say convincingly, because I don't know enough about the physicality of the role, but emotionally... The guy brings it.
Yeah, he's great. He is undeniably great with his acting skills in it. So, let us first open the can of Tiptoes 2003 and figure out what the plot is. Which actually isn't that complicated, really. This is a romantic... I was going to say... No, it is. Well, yeah. I'm going to say a romantic comedy drama that is centered around, at least initially, Matthew McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale. Two beautiful people who we open the movie. They're smooching. She's a painter. He's a firefighter, or he trains firefighters. And it's about their life together. They are, they've been together for, I got the sense it was sort of a, about a year and a half, something like that. They have spoken at some point about getting married. Matthew McConaughey disappears at the start of the movie, rousing suspicion from his partner, Carol. His name is Stephen, because he's going to, what is in essence his family, what are they called? A reunion. But
yeah,
literally, it's, not... it's a little person convention, but so much of his family has dwarfism that they all get together at these conventions, and that's where
that's
they come
right.
and hang
these,
out.
These cheapskate motherfuckers have Trojan horsed their family reunion into an entirely unrelated convention.
Or another interpretation is that they consider the other people living a similar lives to them as their extended family.
That's true, but... you know, a lot, that's a decision that might not be reciprocated by a lot of people who just want to go to a little person convention. They don't want to deal with an entire, you know, the baggage and the high, emotional highs and lows that come with a genuine family unit inserting themselves inside of what is a celebration.
That's true.
I think, you know, the ethics of that particular decision aside, you've done a great job of framing the top of the movie. And from there, the plot just, it is, if you remove
it
the
thickens.
Fact, it, well, barely. If you remove the fact that Matthew McConaughey comes from a family of dwarves or little people, I'm actually not sure what the appropriate word to use. This movie is champions the word and distinction that his family are dwarves. Some of the other characters refer to these people as midgets, and McConaughey gets upset at that, and then Kate Beckinsale says, "I don't really care about the language." But later in the movie, we see the worm turning as she starts to.
She cares a lot. I think the M word is pretty universally recognized as a pejorative. But this movie was made 15 years ago, so like maybe there is new better lingo as well. So apologies. On behalf of Guy and myself, if we're not using the correct nonclementia. But may I grab the reins on the plot again?
At your insistence, go ahead.
So he refuses to tell his partner where he's going. He has not told his partner that he has a lot of family members who have dwarfism. And so she's like a little bit suspicious, but not too suspicious. Maybe he's seeing another woman, something. He's not telling her what it is. She's like, it's kind of weird. It is revealed very quickly up top that she's pregnant. She's carrying a baby. And Matthew McConaughey, Stephen, has quite a weird, angry, bad reaction to this. Not the sort of joyful one you'd expect to see in a movie where a couple in love have an announcement that they're going to get married. So she's, that they're going to have a baby. So that happens, and there's a bit of friction between them. And then, I can't even remember what happens immediately after that. Is it, that's when his brother turns up, right? Which is Gary Oldman.
At their garage loft space.
So McConaughey's dealing with the news badly, and he disappears to work. And then, out of nowhere, pops Gary Oldman.
Kate Beckinsale, understandably surprised. She has not heard tell, I don't know, of whether or not McConaughey has a brother at all. And the movie plays this, you know, that they draw confusion and plot out of this as best they can. And, yeah, I mean, what follows is a very primitive rom-com plot where it's a will they or won't they. Kate Beckinsale continues to carry the baby and learn about the family. McConaughey rails against the idea that I guess it's an identity crisis for him more than anything, isn't it? That's what it's meant to be.
It is. It's him wrestling with himself. I wouldn't describe it as primitive necessarily. This movie is fucking interesting because what it has tried to do, at least, is, I think, laudable and kind of ambitious, in that it is shining a light on the lives of little people and their plight. There's a bit made about the various medical conditions that's associated with dwarfism, and I think it, I mean, I imagine, I haven't had a lot of experience around it, but gives a hopefully pretty accurate depiction of the sorts of things that little people have to deal with in their day-to-day. There's a great scene where the parents meet each other. So Kate Beckinsale's parents meet Matthew McConaughey's parents, who are both dwarves. And that's a bit of fun because they kind of play with the fact that the dad's totally fine with it, but Kate Beckinsale's mum is very taken aback, but then suddenly isn't. And then the problem, without any sort of clue in the dialogue or the scene whatsoever, the problem then becomes that Matthew McConaughey is not Jewish, which is then immediately resolved when he agrees to have a Jewish wedding. And then everything's fine, which is a weird scene. It's fucking bizarre.
It's sort of played like a, yeah, that, I mean, I can see what they're doing. It's not, it doesn't quite earn the right to do it, but there's they say, well, obviously we've got to talk about the elephant in the room. And the issue, I think, is that the elephant to which they're referring is unseeable to literally anyone else. We watch Kate Beckinsale starting to panic, and as you've outlined, it all turns out fine. I just want to say this movie was from the research I've done. This movie originally the original cut that was turned in by director Matthew Bright was significantly longer than the film we just watched.
That makes perfect sense to me, because this ending is abrupt.
Apparently, it was 2.5 hours long.
Wow.
And it screened at a film festival in Austin, Texas, and none other than co-star of the film, Peter Dinklage himself, referred to it as gorgeous. But the people who fired Bright then rapidly, drastically changed the cut and ruined the movie.
That sucks, man.
That's Hollywood, baby. That's showbiz.
Who knows if Dinklage was right, though, because I have so much love for Peter Dinklage. He is like a delight anytime he pops up in on screen, or even if you hear him, because he is, I think, a pretty sought-after voiceover artist as well now. He is not great in this film. He is playing a surly French Marxist misogynist for some reason, who hooks up with Patricia Arquette, who is portraying this sort of drifter hippie chick, and it's like he's very unlikable, but I just can't get past the accent. It's not great.
Yeah,
it's the kind of French accent you do at a party with your friends. I don't know if you're playing a game and you're not a professional actor.
It's controversial to say, but you know, Gary Oldman almost does a better job of portraying a little person in this film than Peter Dinklage does of a French person.
I can't co-sign that, because the thing they have to do with Gary Oldman, which creates some really funny like scene setups, is he always has to like be behind a bench or a couch or something. So like, for example, in the scene where the parents are meeting each other, he is inextricably behind the bar in the house, just serving everyone drinks. Everyone's outside having barbecue, courtesy of Matthew McConaughey's dad, who's a very passionate barbecuer. And Gary Oldman just has to sort of stay inside in the living room, because we've been set up with the fact that he is making the drinks behind the bar. And there's a lot of those kind of shots. They have at some points used some nifty little tricks of the camera, so that you do see a full body shot of Gary Oldman. And I did try in my head to reverse engineer, particularly the ones where he was like lounging on the couch. It might be distasteful for me to get through how I think they did it. I'm not fully sure.
Well, the special effects in this movie involved, I mean, they to make up for the very unnatural way that one must walk when you're walking on your knees, they've given Gary Oldman's character a quite pronounced limp and a cane. And I have also, on the trivia page of IMDb, I've also discovered that Gary Oldman kept his jeans extremely high and tight for the entire film in order to create the illusion of a small person.
There's no getting away from it, folks. You're watching Gary Oldman walking around on his knees for a lot of this film, which is... Here's why that's difficult. All of these characters suck except Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman is not only doing fantastic acting. You don't have to be playing a good character to do good acting. You don't warm to anyone else in this movie. Everyone's pretty deplorable. To be honest, Kate Beckinsale's character is sort of redeemed in the third act, quite big time. But throughout, Gary Oldman is just sort of a salt of the earth guy who's trying to get through his life. He's fallen on hard times, but he's a good guy. He's looking out for people around him. And
he gets the absolute shit taken out of him early in the film as well.
Yeah, he does. He walks in on his ex. Sort of walks in on her. No, actually,
he turns to her for
Sally.
Shelter.
Yeah, that's right. Because he's sort of, I don't want to say destitute, but what is going on with him? It's like, is he without a home when we meet him?
I think it seems to me that him and Peter Dinklage have ridden their motorbikes from wherever they might be based, because he has a home at the end of the film.
True.
So he just has nowhere to stay in Los Angeles.
True. So he goes back to his old sweetheart, Sally, and they were high school sweethearts, and they, I think, have been on again, off again. She's at the convention. There's, Matthew McConaughey knows her very well. There's a lot of history there. And so he's like, hey, I just sort of need to crash at your house. And she's kind of like, let's get back together, right? Even in that brief moment, she's like, let's do it. Let's get back together. And he's like, no. And then Sally is seeing at the time comes in, who's a douchebag, and then they get in a tussle.
Yeah. She seems to be sort of play it as it lies, that kind of person, because they, in some way, they must get back together, or they at least get emotionally involved, because he becomes upset once again later in the film when she has sex with some sort of celebrity. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. What? Was that a real... I don't know who that guy is, but the film makes you feel like he's a real singer. So I don't know if that's true.
I just before we get too far back in the plot, I just want to continue sharing some of this information about the production and Gary Oldman's time on and off screen in it, because a brilliant piece of trivia is that Gary Oldman would often make his famous moose soup for the cast and crew and insisted everyone eat it instead of the provided catering. He claimed it, and I quote, awoke the machines within, end quote, needed for his once-in-a-lifetime performance.
Is this true? This sounds like bullshit. Where are you reading this?
It goes along with other fantastic pieces of trivia, such as when asked what it was like playing a dwarf, Gary Oldman said it was very uncomfortable because of the way his knees would rub on the ground.
Yeah, this sounds like a quality interview that he gave. What is this, finally, Variety? Hollywood
in this
Reporter?
Film, this is the best piece of trivia I've found. In this film, Peter Dinklage drank so much water, he became the official water champ. He was soft at first, but got it done in three long chugs.
This sounds like you wrote that last one.
Yeah, I would have gone to a little bit more trouble for it to make sense. But it seems like not only, you know, parts of the crew and the filmmaking process, they were having fun with it, but it seems to me like the internet has had a lot of fun with this since, and rightly so. Like, it is incredible to consider how much work Gary Oldman is doing as an actor, that you do almost forget he is portraying a little person. And, you know, you've got a feel for, like, I don't know if it's condescending to say this, but you've got a feel for Peter Dinklage or any other number of little people actors who, you know, here's a role with some real fucking emotional heft.
Yeah.
You know, one of not many in the history of cinema. And for Gary Oldman to kick in the door, then
That is a good point.
Climb down on his knees and just act the absolute pants off of it. It's, you know, it's got to break your heart. He does a great job, but... And again, it's 2003, and considering that, it is a pretty forward-looking movie. you know, it's not perfect.
I mean, it's
a, but it's not,
it's
for,
not
for the subject material. It's for the subject material. It's not nearly as problematic as you might imagine. You know, I'd love to see Scarlett Johansson have a crack at that role. Actually,
this is a movie that has been made with love and care. You know, like that much is obvious. The director, I think elements of it maybe are misguided, and I think lots of the script is shit. And there's weird, despite the fact that this is a breezy 90-minute watch, or 91 minutes if you watch the French version, and I really would like to know what that extra minute is, because I saw the English version.
It's an apology for Peter Dinklage's accent.
Just takes 45 seconds at the end of the film. Where was I going with that? I can't even remember what I was saying.
You were saying it's a breezy 90 minutes. It's a well-intentioned film.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's made with love. I want to see this original cut, this like 2.5 hour long version, because it is possible that that was a good movie. You know, I think this movie
unlikely.
Was made with the best of intentions. Peter Dinklage said it was. He, you know, he said in an interview, he described it as, what did you say, gorgeous?
Gorgeous. Yeah.
And I think I read separately somewhere else, he used the word maybe beautiful, something like that. And you get little hints of what I think the rest of this film is. There is a sequence, there's sort of like a little mini scene where there's a phone call between Matthew McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale. And Kate Beckinsale is shown in extreme close-up. We're just getting like her lips in this very shallow depth of field.
That shot is crazy. And they really fucking go back to it.
It comes out of nowhere, and it's a visual style or language that isn't repeated anywhere else in the movie. But I reckon the rest of it is probably a lot more of those bold moves. You know, I reckon that's what's on the cutting room floor. Some real big artistic sweeps.
Yeah. I have no reason to doubt that. I sort of think it's fun. We haven't even got to the end of the plot yet. I guess I'd be curious to see the longer version, because the ending right now as it stands is, as you've said, abrupt and sort of pretty crazy. It's kind of, when you know that the ending's crazy, it's kind of what you suspect might happen, but you don't think they'll just go out and actually do it and then just leave it like that.
Not roll credits on the moment. So what happens is we're watching the not so gradual, it's pretty sudden, disintegration of Matthew McConaughey's character in the face of bringing a baby into the world that might have dwarfism as well.
Yeah, quite then, late in the piece, it's introduced that his character might have anger management issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is not discussed at any point earlier. For the first hour, you're sort of like, oh, he's just a regular guy who's occasionally maybe a little bit of an arsehole. But then it's like, oh, I know he's...
Yeah, she suggests about midway through the film that he should probably seek therapy for basically, like, you know, denying his family and hiding it from her, and that he doesn't deal with this side of his life and who he is very well, which I think is well-intentioned. I think it's probably good advice from Kate Beckinsale, which obviously he doesn't take very well, but, you know, is what it is. But then Kate Beckinsale has the baby, and he fucking, like, punches a hole in the wall in the delivery room while they're talking to the doctor about hormone therapies that the baby's going to get. Like, that's not... And everyone kind of... The doctor is there, and everyone just kind of goes on like, okay, well, you know, you're a little bit upset, da-da-da. It's like, nah, man, that's that's cooked. You can't do that. You can't punch a hole in a wall in a fucking hospital. Not
absolutely.
With a newborn baby there. It's crazy.
Absolutely
stuff.
You can't. And they fight. The way they fight in front of the baby also, I mean, again, not a parent, not my place to say, but it's just, it doesn't seem to me to be on.
Breaks your heart.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
But, you know, it's a high-stress situation. People aren't perfect. Matthew McConaughey's character isn't. And this is actually like, there's a lot of things this film, it wins you over with. And I think Kate Beckinsale's treatment of their relationship is something that really appeals to me. Because she kind of like, I feel she really tries at the beginning. And she kind of, she actually does all this independent research. She starts meeting with members of his family. She befriends and strikes up quite a close kinship with Gary Oldman, who is Matthew McConaughey's brother in this, and she ends up really bettering herself after initially coming out and using pejorative terms and saying, oh, I don't care about, you know, I don't care about that stuff, when she uses the wrong terminology and Matthew McConaughey bristles at it. She has a great journey to caring about these people, learning about them, getting over herself, trying to bring Matthew McConaughey into that newfound sort of world of knowledge and love with her, fails to do so. And then she's like, you know what, bro? You cut. I'm not going to bring a baby into the world with you when you're going to be such a fucking douchebag. And I'm like, good shit, Kate Beckinsale.
That's right. And so she takes her child to... She sort of leaves...
The woods.
Yeah, she leaves McConaughey and she goes to the woods to live with Gary Oldman in his house, where inevitably, and eventually we wind up underneath a moonlit sky. And Gary Oldman and her are having a moment that is rampant with sexual tension before Kate Beckinsale gently turns to Gary Oldman and says, "You can kiss me, Rolf." And he does. And no sooner have their lips met than the credits roll and you're just left to talk to Tim about what the fuck just happened.
It's so abrupt. It is the most abrupt credit roll I've ever seen in my life. It's just like a kiss, boom, we're done. We're out of there. I don't even know if we're supposed to have a good idea of what's going to happen with Matthew McConaughey's character. But also, we don't really care. My main fascination in this film was Peter Dinklage, I've got to say. I love the guy. As I said, he didn't do a great job in this movie, I don't think. Not his best work. His accent's all over the shop.
That's what is fun about it. I think a good exercise might be for us to list all of the reasons outside of the plot and story of the movie, all the things that would get you, say you, Tim, to be like, fuck it, I have to watch this movie. So obviously you've got Gary Oldman portraying a little person, which is fascinating, funny, and interesting all at once.
Yes.
You've got Peter Dinklage who's performing this very over-the-top. This is what is fun. It's not a great acting performance, but you can see he's having fun with it. A very over-the-top French Marxist motorcycle riding kind of asshole who at one point you get to see with sort of Coolio-style cornrows or braids.
What bit of the movie does he have cornrows in?
It's probably close to the braids. I can't place it exactly, but I remember seeing it, thinking, "Fucking, why not? Why would this guy not do that with his hair?"
I watched a little bit of this movie very late last night, so that I could do this early
It's later in the
what the shit? Anyway,
it's later in the film. But I mean, if you want to see Peter Dinklage putting on a French accent with hair like Coolio and the gangsters on this is a sidebar, but I was going to say in the Gangster's Paradise video, but I most vividly remember Coolio and his hairstyle in the intro for Nickelodeon television show Kenan and Kel.
That's the reference point, folks. I don't remember him being in it. No, guy. He's not.
Mm. He's not in the show, but they got a theme song with Coolio being Coolio, just rapping it like a music video.
It's a good get.
You don't see a lot of that kind of intro anymore, with just like a musical artist playing themselves, describing the premise of the show. And that's a real shame.
That needs to come back. I think this film could have been served by something like that. If I was to select a musical artist to do a bit of the plot here, it's actually a great way to just get some of the story out of the way, so we can really just rip into the fun and characterization. Movies should open with a song explaining the setup.
What's about to happen. Yeah, it's nice. I've always loved Lauren Lapkus's podcast intro for that very reason. It's perfect. It says, hey, this is what you're about to listen to. It's fucking...
I think for some reason Christina Aguilera is coming into my head for this film. I think she would do a great job of telling us what Tiptoes is all about.
2003.
Oh, it's because of the baby. I was trying to figure out what the title was about. It's the baby.
What do you mean?
Wasn't that what you say? You like hear the pitter-patter of little feet? No, wait, that still doesn't make sense. Fuck.
No, it's Tiptoes. Tiptoes definitely something to do with trying to make yourself taller. Oh, getting up on your tiptoes.
That feels a little on the nose, doesn't it?
But that's what it's got to be, right?
I guess so. The guy who directed this film, is his name Matthew Wright?
Bright.
He had a crack at a Ted Bundy film 1 year before this came out. And unfortunately, it was before True Crime Podcast had done the heavy lifting of getting people excited about seeing, Zac Efron portraying a serial killer, and it lost a tremendous amount of money.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's just called Ted Bundy. And I think I was just looking at it before. I think it was a budget of maybe like 1.3 mil, and it took tens of thousands of dollars in the box office.
Well, yeah, you hate to see it actually. If I go into his IMDb, Tiptoes was kind of it for this guy.
Yeah, Tiptoes was the last thing he's made, eh? It's the last entry in his filmography.
He's sort of building quite a solid bank of work, and it looks like the trajectory is going in the right direction. And then, you know, you put out one film in which Gary Oldman portrays a little person, and suddenly your name is mud in Hollywood. But
this film didn't even get a theatrical release, unfortunately. It went straight to DVD.
Fuck, man. It's so crazy.
And that was not the intention. This is a fucking 2003, man. I can't remember exactly what McConaughey was up to at the time, but people knew who he was. He's a good-looking leading man. Kate Beckinsale, probably just before all of the... What were the goddamn vampire ones?
Underworld or whatever.
Underworld, the Underworld series. Gary Oldman is a timeless classic. Everyone's known he's been great for ages. Peter Dinklage, Game of Thrones wasn't out, so he wasn't as famous as he is now. But people still knew he was a great, a really solid acting talent. This was a fucking good-ass cast. And I'd love to know how much this movie cost. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to find that information. Because I reckon it'd be quite a lot.
Underworld and Van Helsing and The Aviator, all starring Kate Beckinsale, came out the same year or immediately after Tiptoes. I mean, this is right at the height of... At the height of her arrival and fame. McConaughey, meanwhile, had just put out How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days opposite...
That was huge.
Kate Hudson, The Wedding Planner. Like, and what did... Gary Oldman had been in Hannibal in 2001. Like, all of these people are not at the height of their fame necessarily, but certainly at the peak of, you know, they're all three qualified A-listers alongside Peter Dinklage and Patricia Arquette, who are two well-recognized character actors. And for it to be buried without a cinema release, like, I guess the internet wasn't around and as prevalent then. Can you imagine the furore if this trailer and this movie was announced in modern times?
I reckon it would probably make a lot of money. Yeah.
Do you?
I think it would, but I think not for the right reasons. I think people would be like, definitely, yes, I will see this. This shouldn't exist. This weird, anachronistic film. But then I keep coming back to the fact that, like, the mission of this film is laudable. And I do think it was made with really strong intentions and a lot of love from the director. This is certainly not a film that is poking fun of dwarfism or little people. And I like the little moments that we get of seeing some realistic portrayals of the sort of trials and tribulations of particularly the medical aspects of dwarfism. Like, Peter Dinklage hooks up with Patricia Arquette and they're getting freaky in a cheap hotel room or a motel room alongside Gary Oldman, who there's only one room left. It's like Jesus, you know? There was only one space left, so they had to share the room. And just like Jesus, Peter Dinklage fucks Patricia Arquette. But then, because he's had so much booze and stuff, he gets a lot of pain. He gets very ill. And Gary Oldman has to explain to Patricia Arquette that it's just sort of part of the territory. It's a lot of pain and sort of suffering that comes with being a little person. It's all good stuff. It's, you know, it's dark, it's gripping, it's personal. It's what drama is.
You get a shot of
Peter
Dinklage.
But then you got Gary Oldman.
His hair is beautiful. He pulls out a little fucking revolver and he's back against the wall, ready to shoot this motel owner who pretty reasonably is just like, hey, you guys, it's 3 p.m., it's checkout, you've only paid for one night. And he's like, okay, I'm going to escalate this to the highest possible degree draw a gun. And before he can do anything, he somehow pleaded such a persuasive case of the lifestyle to Patricia Arquette that she just bursts out the door and starts beating this guy's ass hard.
She's a loose cannon, though. She's ready to go off at anyone. I don't think it took a lot for her to get there. What do you think of her character? What do you think of Patricia Arquette's character in this?
She, I don't know, like, she's not specifically very well drawn. She's fun to play. Like, her and Peter Dinklage is just nice whenever they're on screen because I don't know that they were given scripts. I feel like everyone else maybe was given a guiding script and then they were like, okay, Patricia, Peter, you go away, you create backstories for your characters, and then you can just come and fill out the world of the movie. And
this is a fucking stunning indictment on Patricia Arquette's sense of imagination if she came up with this.
And then they went away and they sort of thought about it initially for 5 minutes and then forgot about it for 2 weeks. And then suddenly they were on set and Peter Dinklage just started doing the accent and rolled right ahead with it. And Patricia Arquette was like, well, abrasive drunk woman, I guess.
Yeah, she's basically a two-dimensional version of someone you'd meet at Burning Man. You know, a lot of, like, Peter Dinklage wakes up after he's been in extreme pain in that hotel room with all of these gemstones and crystals laid on his body that Patricia Arquette keeps put there. It's nice little touches like that. You know, there's a bit of fun to be had in this film. Matthew McConaughey's character is so irredeemable, though. It's so crazy to get the arguably sort of central person. At the outset of the film, he's set up to be the star, but he isn't really by the end. And he's just a fucking nightmare. The dude's a war. Hey, here's a question. So they go to a party in the middle of this movie, right? And I think it's part of the journey of Kate Beckinsale coming to terms and normalizing all these little people who are in her life now via Matthew McConaughey's family. And Matthew McConaughey inextricably brings two female recruits who he's training to be in the fire service. What the fuck's up with that? Well, I guess it was probably explained in the 2.5 hour
it's 2.5 hour movie stuff because it's they're obviously seeding, like, you know, the idea. You see glimpses of the fact that Kate Beckinsale might be afraid that McConaughey's up to no good before it comes out that he's just trying to not cover, I guess, but, you know, that he's not being open about his family. And so I feel like because we see him interacting with one of those firefighting cadets at work, who I feel it's like in the 2.5 hour movie is probably revealed to be a bad person, like some sort of, I imagine she's drawn as some sort of selfish and greedy seductress who wants McConaughey for whatever reason. And Kate Beckinsale's, I don't know, threatened by her or whatever. I feel like in the 2.5 hours, you would have seen a big fight around that character at some point.
Do you reckon they fucked Guy Montgomery, the recruit, and Matthew McConaughey's character?
In the 2.5 hour version? No, I don't think so. Yeah. McConaughey's character's got a lot of problems, but I don't think loyalty to his partner is one of them.
I don't trust this movie enough. I reckon he did cheat on her. Why else would you put all these weird things in the movie? It's so weird that he brings those two women to the party. It's not explained even a little bit.
I want to introduce you to two of my junior colleagues who I've brought to this swanky, another family reunion / general party.
That party looked fucking dope, though. It looked like a really good time. Like, the house itself was fantastic, and everyone looked like they were having a ball. Until, who did Peter Dinklage get in a big fight with? Was it Sally, his old sweetheart, or was it someone else? That was the party where Sally is fucking this muso in a room that's like a dining room with these huge open bay windows looking out onto a very full patio of people. And she's fucking this dude, and we are led to believe that it's invisible to the partygoers because the lights are off. And it's not until Gary Oldman walks in and turns the lights on that it's like, oh yeah, we can see you. It's like, no, you'd definitely be able to see that. She's right up against the window.
Yeah, it's not quite perfect, but sometimes it gets so close that it scares the shit out of me. I would recommend Tiptoes to literally anyone. It is just as a cultural curiosity. It is well worth stopping by. And at 90 minutes, it does breeze straight through. I mean, the ending will arrive very quickly. But Matthew Bright directed this movie. He also wrote it under the pen name Bill Wiener.
What the fuck is that about? You kidding me?
No.
I'd like to have a chat to Matthew and find out what that was all about. I think what needs to happen now is that I think they need to remake Tiptoes and they need to do it properly. And they could involve a lot of the same people. Gary Oldman died, didn't he?
No.
I keep thinking he's dead. Because I keep getting him confused with someone and I don't know who it is.
Gary Oldman is super alive.
One day I will... Who played Snape?
Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman, so I keep thinking of. I don't know why I confused those two. They're pretty fucking different. Anyway, they need to remake Tiptoes, I think. Because, here's the thing. I don't know of any other film that tries to tackle with the subject matter of what it's like to be a little person or the intersecting worlds of having little people in your family or being a little person and sort of, you know, the interesting intersections with the rest of society. It's good. It's ripe terrain, and I want to see it done right, and I'd like to see the studio not wrestle it out of the director and writer's hands, who may call himself Mr. Wiener on occasion. That's, you got to trust the creative process, all right? Let him release his movie. I want Peter Dinklage to definitely be there again. I could take or leave Patricia Arquette. I think Kate Beckinsale's had her day. I insist upon Matthew McConaughey reprising his role as a fucking asshole punching a wall in a hospital. And I want to see all the other little people, because I think all of them did great performances. I didn't see any of them drop the ball, except Peter Dinklage's accent.
Yeah, but he's a big draw now, so you got to keep him around.
Bankable as fuck. So I think Tiptoeing Back In. That's the subtitle.
So it's not a remake. I want to see it next year. No. What? It's not a remake. It's just the same characters in the modern day.
Yeah. It's like one of those reboots where it's kind of, a sequel. It's a sequel.
Well, I think they got it right the first time. So why bother? A perfect film.
For me, a loving 3 out of 5. Honestly, 3 out of 5 for this movie. 90 minutes. You're not going to miss an hour and a half. Thank you so much for voting for it, everyone. I know that this has been a long journey. This has been in the polls for ages among the Patreon Deciders Club, which you can be part of by contributing $10 a month to our Patreon, and then you get to decide which of these movies we watch. In the present day, we're trying to crank through slightly more of these than normal. We normally do one a month, but we're trying to do a couple a month at the moment. So thank you for this delight. Can't wait to see what you find for us next. And Guy Montgomery, I'm glad you had a good time. I think you had a good time. Sounds like you had a good time with this one.
I did. I had a good time. It was a rare delight at the hands of and mercy of our barbaric listeners. So thank you so much. Also, if you are in London, England, it's probably worth mentioning that we are coming to the London Podcast Festival on Friday, the 6th of September, for a live show, the likes of which we have not put on before and will not put on again.
This is going to be a very special event. You will not want to miss this.
That's right. Should we announce it now or should we do that later?
No, later, because we got to iron out all the kinks, I think, figure this thing out. But suffice to say, it's high stakes.
Yeah, it's high stakes. So that's the worst day of all time. It's part of the London Podcast Festival. We are there on the 6th of September. Very excited. Our first trip as a podcast to the United Kingdom. So if you are there or know anyone there who can make it along, please send them our way. We'd love to see you. Otherwise, continue to choose kindly and wisely. And thank you.
R.I.P. Gary Oldman.
Tiptoes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.